Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Distance Learning Anarchy Series with Freedom Fiends Michael W. Dean.
Broadcasting from my windowless bunker.
And Nima Vedati.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends!
Greetings, fiends. What's up, my Wormrin?
My fellow Wormrin, how are you doing today?
Wormrin. Good morning, yes. Worm, Your Honor. The crown will plainly show the prisoner who now stands before you was caught red-handed showing feelings of an almost human nature.
Is that the wall?
Yeah, but it is. I've been watching BBC comedies because, some people need, like, DJ needs to read, and it doesn't matter what she's reading. She just calls it words in a row. I need to be watching jokes in a row, even if they're not very good.
Jokes in a row.
And and when
I heard it over the mumble, or what do we use now? The compass, the cactus. And I thought, are you watching an American documentary? And you're like, no, I'm watching a British comedy. It sounded the same.
American documentaries sound like British comedies?
Yes, because they always get a British, or at least like, you know, the cheese dick Discovery Channel ones. They always sound like... they always get a British guy to do the narration, especially if it's a nature one.
I don't know, man.
The lion laid down with the...
Do you watch... Have you watched them lately? They generally have Morgan Freeman narrating them.
I guess it's been a good while.
Or the other avuncular, distinguished black gentleman. I forget his name, but he does the insurance commercials, and he's also the president in some movie that Morgan Freeman's not the president in, where something's hurtling to earth.
The You're in Good Hands?
Yeah, yeah.
Really? Was he a black president in a movie?
I think he... No, he's the... You know what he is? I think he's the president in 48 or 24, whatever that horrible statist...
As we like to call it, stomp him in the nuts.
To torture a predator, I think it's called.
To torture a predator.
Yes. To torture a potential terrorist.
To torture the desperate kid at the Islamic bookstore.
Yeah. So I was, I finished watching the increasingly poor decisions of Todd Margaret, starring David Cross and Will Arnett.
Were the decisions increasingly poor?
Yeah, they end up with him being deported in North Korea and pushing a button to set off a thermonuclear war, actually. That's a spoiler, sorry. But it wasn't that good. It wasn't the best thing. But it, you know who it has in it is Spike Jones. I didn't even know it was him. I never know it's him.
Yeah.
The guy who directed Three Kings and is in Three Kings playing the little redneck soldier.
Yeah, that blew my mind that was Spike Jones, because you were going off on his filmography, if you will.
Yeah.
And I'm like, really? Wow, he's a good actor.
Adaptation, being John Malkovich. Yeah, you know who he kind of looks like? He kind of looks like the little dude that plays the lead in Orgasmo. You ever seen Orgasmo?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's like the same height and kind of build, like same lineup. Spike Jones is probably my height and probably weighs 40 or 50 pounds less. You know, he's a skinny, skinny little peckerwood white dude with a big nose.
Right. Chota boy.
So at the end of the increasingly poor decisions of Todd Margaret, where he makes an incredibly poor decision and goes to North Korea and nukes the world, it said, if you like, you know, Netflix said, if you liked the increasingly poor decisions of Todd Margaret, you'll love Saxondale, which is a BBC comedy. I don't know if anyone else in their right mind or in America
has ever watched it
would like it, but there's two seasons of it. It sounds like if somehow I got a job as a writer at the BBC and I said, okay, take an hour and pitch us a show. All right. It's about a 50-year-old, hip, long-haired, bearded, former roadie for Deep Purple and Emerson, Lake & Palmer, chubby chaser, kinky, weapons aficionado, girlfriend runs a t-shirt store called store called Smash the System that sells t-shirts with picture that she makes with pictures of nuns and the royal family smoking weed.
Nice.
He works as a pest control guy. They use Jethro Tull in the soundtrack. He's an Americophile, drives a vintage Mustang muscle car, and every episode starts with him making fun of the facilitator in his court-ordered anger management group that meets in a children's library. And there's a row of books behind his head that have titles like Everyone's a Winner, making fun of that kind of mentality.
Uh-huh. Nice.
Yeah.
That sounds like the show you would pitch.
It does.
That's great.
Yeah. And he's smash
the system, baby.
He owns a company. It's him and one employee who's like the young 21-year-old hip looking cute weird dude who really does nothing other than be the straight man and be there to be cute so young people will like the show. And he's part of his pest control job is shooting pigeons with the high powered air rifle and air pistol. And there's one scene where he's this is kind of funny because it's like positive gun humor in England from 3 years ago on BBC, but I guess they can do it on TV, but not in real life. So he's on this pest control job, and these three dreadlocked, crusty punk animal rights activists come and start bitching at him for shooting pigeons. And one of them pulls out a knife, and he doesn't seem like he's seriously trying to hurt the guy. He's just like waving it in the air from like 10 feet away going, well, what if I decided you needed to be dispatched or needed to be killed? And he's waving the gun around. First he says, y'all running around here like you're in the army. Why don't you go join the army? And Tommy Saxondale, our hero, says, I don't like the hours. And the animal rights activist starts waving a penknife at Tommy. And Tommy says, oh, well, you know that now that I'm legally and morally able to respond with escalating force. And the animal rights activist isn't very bright. He's like, what's that mean? And Tommy shoots him in the kneecap with a metal air pistol bullet and just lays him out and says,
wow.
Okay, you'll be all right. Just rub that with some calamine and in about a week you'll be walking again. You'll be fine. And just walks away.
Oh, good times.
Yeah,
I guess if you're a weapons aficionado in England, you're an air rifle aficionado.
Yeah, well, you probably would need licensure to own what he owns. I mean, what he owns could definitely put an eye out and could keep you from walking for a few days. But
you'll put your eye out.
As his job, his job is dispatching beasts.
His job is denaturing.
Yes.
He's official denaturer.
Yes. And there's one scene where his girlfriend's t-shirt store, Smash the System, is in some really Tony fancy mall. And all the other shop owners in the mall want her to cover her windows in her store because they don't like it. And they have this meeting, and Tommy attends it with his girlfriend, Mags. Mm-hmm. And one of the guys says, I mean, I run a store called The Happy Bride. What message is sent by the happy bride coming in to pick out things for her favorite day of her life and seeing a t-shirt with a Teletubby shooting other Teletubbies with an AK-47 machine gun? And he said, first, it's not an AK-47. It's a Heckler & Koch, blah, 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 blah. You know, just he knows his weapons. And he says that an AK-47 would be completely insufficient for shooting Teletubbies at close range because of the overpenetration. So, yeah. He's a cool guy, man. He's kind of, I relate.
Yeah. There's a YouTube guy that has like a thick British accent that does a lot of like takedowns and how to videos and shows off his weapons collection. And I think he lives in the States now. I forget his name, but he's real fun to watch because Yeah, man, just because the state or the government folks in England passed a bunch of silly rules doesn't mean that the weapons aficionados all of a sudden said, oh, well, we don't like weapons anymore. You know, they just they had to come here or get into air rifles or just become fantasy people.
Or just have guns. You missed that part.
I did miss that part. Non-compliance, of course.
Yeah. Which was
peaceful resistance when it comes to guns.
Yeah, which was like 90% or more in what's the part of Canada that's right above Montana? The Wyoming of Canada.
Saskatchewan?
Yeah, when they required registration of long guns there, like nobody did it. You know, based on how many people they think own guns there and how many people actually registered. Yeah. It was close to nothing.
De facto freedom.
Yeah, in today's episode, should we call it The State is Organized Barbarism or Poking the Hornet's Nest?
I like The State is Organized Barbarism. Beautiful.
Yeah, I came up with that the other day.
Good job.
In a dream.
Bravo. Good show. Old chap.
Yes. Old chap. Yeah. I like Saxondale because Tommy Saxondale is an old chap and he's very cool and he's kinky and he likes weapons and curvy ladies.
He's the English Michael Dean.
He kind of is, man. Yeah.
I can see why you'd identify with that. Kudos to Netflix for getting a suggestion right, huh?
Yeah, they usually don't. It's kind of weird, too, because our Netflix is in DJ's name, and it always says, like, Deborah, you'll love Saxondale. And I'm like, DJ, check this out. And she's like, ugh, that's horrible. I don't like it. You know, everything, like, it thinks somewhere there's a government database saying she likes a bunch of kinds of movies that she does not like.
Throwing them off the scent, huh?
Yeah, and then, like, our Amazon account is in my name, so, you know, there's a government dossier somewhere that says, I like 900-page purple capey fiction that takes place in Days of Yore, and I don't.
Days of Yore, yeah. Yes. I always preferred the future fiction myself, but that's just me.
That's just meme.
Yeah.
Science fiction comic adventure from Big Head Press, Quantum Vibe.
Ah, yes. Which you can go read and see. I don't know.
I keep looking for a character with my last name, and I don't see one. Nice story, Scott, but I don't see my name in it. Like Nima saw his name in it.
Maybe he's saving you for later.
Something horrible. A worm cat.
Worm cat, yes. A kinky worm cat.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, of course.
Yes. You were going to say that likes plump lady worms, weren't you?
I thought that went without saying.
Yeah.
So I let our audience fill in the blanks.
I heard you not say it. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good time.
F those skinny cats, man.
Yeah.
Speaking of plump cats, Charlie is banging at the back door and I have to go let her in. So freestyle.
Freestyle. Okay. yeah, man. So, you know, I'm looking at the internet this morning, and I have the iGoogle. So the iGoogle comes up immediately when I click on it, and it has the CNN top stories, and their top stories are all opinion pieces about why there isn't more statism. The top one, why Obama couldn't land gun reform. And it's all just a bunch of crybaby stuff. Is that the only opinion people at CNN anymore is crybabies? The other one was about how the sequestration is hurting our children and elderly, and had such a dire Chicken Little thing about how the sequestration was going to destroy everything. And I thought we were over that.
40 billion jobs. We're going to lose 40 billion jobs.
40 billion jobs.
I don't know, man. I think there's something about, like, when you go to full-on socialism, your media becomes better. Because, you know, Saxondale, man, it's like the best thing ever made. I mean, he's so in love with his girlfriend. She's so in love with him. He calls her his my curvy angel winched down from heaven. man, I love life. I love life. I slept like 5 hours. I got up, saw my wife off to work, had a good time, petted cats, watched me some Saxondale, drank a bunch of coffee, and then fell asleep for like 3 hours and had like feverish coffee dreams, and then got up and watched some more Saxondale, didn't call any radio stations, and just decided to give it a day off, man. And
nice.
I don't care what CNN is doing. I want to talk about Saxondale for an hour and a half.
Okay.
Maybe we should just watch an episode together and broadcast it and comment, do director's
Mystery
commentary.
Mystery Science Theater.
Director's commentary of things we didn't direct yet.
Okay.
Nah.
I don't care.
Okay, so did you go antiquing this morning?
I didn't. I got 7 hours of sleep, woke up, and read a little bit of news, sat on the bidet, drank some coffee, ate some fruit, and then
did a sit and spin?
Did a sit... You don't spin. The bidet does all the work for you. That's the beauty.
The water spins.
It doesn't heat. It's not a heated bidet, right? So it doesn't warm the water. But summertime and springtime in Texas, it's so hot outside that the tap water is warm anyway. So I was very pleased to feel the warm water and be like, ah. And I didn't even need to buy a more expensive bidet. I just take advantage of Texas.
You know, I've done... lots of interesting things with my butt, and they're not all in my past. And a lot of them are less, by far less mentionable than a bidet. But bidet doesn't appeal to me, man. I've never tried one, but the idea of squirting water on my butt just sounds like it would tickle.
It doesn't tickle. It just makes you feel clean. Like, you know, when you come home
from
a hard day's
work
and your feet
I don't feel dirty, unlike
dirty.
You. I feel clean. Mm. Of course, I don't. Really? I don't go out to work. I don't deal with college students. I guess that would make me feel dirty.
Yeah, they really do.
Statists, tax years.
Yeah, I ate some fruit, and then I was like, I'm gonna DJ for a little bit because I hadn't turned on
wicca,
the deck
wicca,
for a little
wicca,
while.
Wicca.
And I was like, okay, just 10 minutes. And whenever I'd say that, just 10 minutes mixing, it always turns into 45 minutes. And then I was like, oh crap, it's 3 o'clock. I gotta get on the fiends and do some fiend stuff. So
yeah, I know you were 2 minutes late. I was just about to start screaming at you, but then you came on and I was watching Saxondale, so I didn't care. We got a really interesting comment from someone named Semi-Nihilistic Libertarian Mix of Sweetness. I'm going to have you read this. It's pretty funny.
Semi-Nihilistic, huh? Okay.
Yeah, I just sent it to you.
Yes. All right. Semi-Nihilistic Libertarian Mix of Sweetness says, the fiends are the I like it when Nima and Michael talk about music, movies, and how to blame things on the government, because we can. And states kind of suck. Fiends also employ some use of humor. This feels good to the parts of my brain in which humor includes feelings of euphoria. I can just feel it up there in my brain, smiley face. Jacob Michael Moeller, kitties are so nice, you gotta tickle their bellies. Monkey noises.
That was his response to that comment. Yeah. I like this. I like all of it. It's weird.
Oh, yeah. It's great. It's weird like the fiends are weird, man.
I think I just came up with a new motto for the fiends while you were reading that.
It's not YOLO, is it?
No, it's...
That's the motto.
The fiends, a bidet for your brain.
Ooh, that's really good. I like that.
Yeah?
So we are, man. We wash away all the statist bull crap, or human crap, I guess. Yeah, it's human crap. It's politician crap. All clogging up your brain holes. You gotta squirt it out with the fiends bidet, baby.
Yeah. I was thinking about a couple things about the state and how dirty it is. You know, the thing about the TSA wearing the blue gloves now, first of all, like, you know, nurses and doctors wear blue gloves now. Is there a different code for different gloves? Like, why is it all purple or purple gloves? Why is it all purple gloves now?
Is it purple gloves now? I thought it was
It's purple.
I don't know.
Purple
or
blue.
I guess I haven't been to the doctor in a while.
Yeah. But okay, first of all, if it were LibPair and there was an equivalent of the TSA, you know, on the voluntary thing you go through to be on the safer plane or whatever, and it actually worked, if I worked for that agency, I probably would want to wear gloves because I'm handling people's crap all day. But on the other hand, there's something really offensive to me about that they're wearing purple gloves, even though it makes sense to do it. But it's kind of like, we're beneath them. They don't want to touch the peasants when they have to interact with us. The dirty, dirty, filthy peasants.
Yeah. I don't know. There's kind of this weird dichotomy in their brain, too, because then they always try to play the victim and be like, we're just doing our jobs. Because, you know, the TSA is one of those agencies that does get a lot of flack from more than just anarchists and libertarians. A lot of people hate what they do, especially the feeling up of old ladies and sticking their hands in your grandpa's diaper. People hate that. And they have these op-eds, and there's these news pieces that use their quotes, and they're always like, you know, we're people too. We have feelings. It's like, well, yeah, everybody has feelings, but if you're a human with feelings and you go and ruin somebody else's feelings by touching their naughty parts for no good reason, then you deserve some ridicule.
Do people really care? I mean, I see a lot of polls that say that like 75% of Americans or something say, well, it keeps us safe, so I guess it's good.
I would venture that those are probably mostly unscientific polls. There's self-selection bias going on.
They're polls of people in the airport who just went through it and don't include the people that got secreted off to some room for complaining about
probably,
it.
Probably. Or their phones that give calls to old people on landlines who haven't flown in 5 years and haven't experienced it in forever. But yeah, man, there is outrage. You know, I listen a lot to 24/7 comedy here in Austin. I think it's a nationally syndicated format. Like instead of smooth jazz or talk radio, you can switch to the 24/7 comedy format. And there's a lot of like bits that everybody does. You know, comedians will all do the same joke in a slightly different way. And one of those bits that everybody has a bit about pretty much is the TSA and how ridiculous it is or silly it is. That they take the shampoo bottles and the toothpaste tubes and all that. And B, that they fill up grandma and grandpa.
Yeah, you know, I was looking at the ACLU's website today and A, they've changed in a good way, and B, I think my attitude towards them has changed. I used to kind of think, oh, the ACLU, those liberal, well, you know. But I really think that, and I hear that a lot from people who are libertarian or tending libertarian, and I think a lot of it is just like bleed over from Fox News, you know, like, oh, they help Muslims, they're bad. The ACLU seems to be really fighting fights that we're fighting now. Like they have a whole section against militarization. Like they've actually, sued to get records of how much funding different municipalities are getting. And they have a section called like cities don't need tanks about Bearcats,
Maybe. They've also got a program, I think, to sort of attack the government on the fact not only that they're entrapping people, you know, that the FBI's job nowadays is to go and find the person with the lowest IQ in the mosque and try to convince him to say something dumb, but also that they infiltrate mosques in the first place and eavesdrop on people's religion, i.e. violating the First Amendment. They're doing a lot of good work, and like Scott Horton says, you know, there still needs to be, as long as we're in this system right now, there needs to be lawyers whose job it is to sue the government all day, every day. And that's kind of what the ACLU is.
Yeah, and the thing that neocons or people who are somewhere between neocon and libertarian need to understand, you know, is that you may not be a Muslim, you may not know any Muslims, but sticking up for the legal rights of Muslims being violated is good for you, because anything they can do to them in a year or two, they'll be doing to Christians or gun owners with the same legal framework of when a line is passed with the law and the government gets away with it more than once and keeps doing it, it becomes the new normal and it becomes what they can do. And when they, you know, they'll do it to people that are a minority that no one complains about, or, you know, that you don't complain about, like Muslims. And then when they get away with that a bunch with Muslims, they'll go, hey, we can do that with, you know, Christians who homeschool, because that's not good, too. We need to infiltrate them and plant some fertilizer bombs on them and say they're bad. You know?
Yeah, or they'll start going into, you know, Christian churches in rural places and saying, well, this is the next Timothy McVeigh goes to church here.
That's what I just said, basically, in different ways. But, yeah.
But more than that, you know.
No, it's good. It expands on it.
And anything they feel like filling their days with, because that's all they are, is rent seekers. Anything they feel like, it becomes, well, you know, we did that to this group, and this group, so let's just pick a new group to harass. And they think in that way, too, because their status, they think in collective groups. So they don't think of, oh, well, everybody's an individual, and it has nothing to do with the church you go to or your extracurricular activities. It has to do with how you are as a person and who you are as a person. And they just go and F with people, basically.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about nanny states where you can't have a gun. You know, basically, they want you to die. They would rather a woman be raped and beaten than shoot the guy in the kneecap or shoot the guy at all. But the thing that I haven't really thought about until recently about that kind of mentality is it's also they want you to be totally dependent on the state. They want your only recourse against a violent person with a weapon – to call the state, you know, to call 911 and hope a man with a gun shows up who's authorized. And, you know, gun owners are fond of saying, you know, when, you know, order a pizza and call 911 and the pizza will get there first. But, or when seconds count, police are only minutes away. And that's true. It's not true 100% of the time. I mean, I'm sure there are times when police are called and get there in time to prevent a violent crime. It's probably pretty rare, but it happens enough that they can point to it and say, see, we're there to protect you. And it's so, it's so insane to think, well, let's not even think about the math of it, about the, you know, I mean, the one time out of 100 that the police prevent a violent crime by showing up in time, I would say, you know, even if it was 99 times out of 100, it's still immoral for them to say, you have to let us have a monopoly on being the guy with the gun.
It's funny because those kinds of things get overrepresented in the media. For instance, it's almost a man bites dog story when the cops do something really good like that. And it becomes, oh, that's a great story. We got to get that.
Explain man bites dog.
Five and six. Well, it's a term in journalism to say you're not looking for the dog bites man stories because the dog bites man all the time. You're looking for those interesting twists, those things that
make an
audience go, huh, I never thought that would happen. Let me watch the news for the next few minutes. And I remember one time it was just a run-of-the-mill guys going through doing car prowling, breaking into cars and backyards and just grabbing what they can as a crime of convenience. But the police actually caught the guy, which was kind of rare. And then not only that, they spent the rest of the day going around this neighborhood returning items to people door to door. And it was like, wow, you know, everybody in the newsroom was like, that's kind of rare. And that's the way I pitched it was, you know, that usually never happens. And so, of course, it was the story, and I'm not sure if it was the lead, but it was up there in the A block, and it wasn't a feature. It was like, well, look at this, it's interesting, and you know, that kind of thing happens all the time when the cops save somebody or do something that seems like good on its face, then it gets overplayed in the media. Whereas if Joe Blow is a very security-minded person and has layers of security and follows all the good best practices to keep his house from being broken into in the first place, carries a gun and somebody tries to attack him and all he does is show that he's armed and the attacker goes away, that Joe Blow guy is not going to contact the media and say, hey, guess what happened to me? And even if he did, the reporter was going to be like, well, I mean, there's no proof.
Yeah.
I mean, did you take pictures? Did you have a HD Pro helmet cam on when the guy attacked you? I mean, is there B-roll? Can we make that into a story? And the answer is no, you can't. So those kinds of things, though they might happen all the time, nobody ever knows about it. The general public doesn't get a sense that kind of stuff goes on. They think the cops are the only people out there doing security work.
Yeah, with citizens, if it bleeds, it leads. If there's blood in the story, it becomes a story in the news. If it's just someone, no one gets shot and the bad guy runs away, it's not news. Now, if the cops pull a gun and the bad guy runs away, it's news.
Oh, it is. Yeah, definitely.
Is man bites dog a journalism school term? Do they use that term in J school?
I'm pretty sure. I mean, I doubt it was in a textbook, but people talked about it, colleagues and professors, and then people in the professional industry said that too, news directors and such.
There's a great film called Man Bites Dog. It's a Belgian mockumentary shot on film in like 1992. Let me check. Yeah, 92. It's a black comedy. It's basically a film crew. Three-man film crew. It's a cameraman, a tape operator, and a microphone boom operator following a serial killer while he commits his murders.
Huh.
It's a really good movie.
Yeah.
And the guy's really poetic. Like he'll murder some old lady and then he'll stand at the ocean and talk to the sea and recite poetry to it. I mean, he's not a good guy. He's not a hero, right. But it's a really interesting film. And then I think he kills his crew at the end, or they get killed, or something. I don't want to be a spoiler with it, but yeah.
Okay. There is a weird fascination with serial killers, isn't there?
I don't have it
in Western media.
I really don't.
I don't have it, man.
But
it's there. Other people have it. I mean, what's that show? Dexter. Look at the success of that, and he kind of is the good guy, right?
I don't know. I don't know what that is.
I think that's the whole concept of the show is. he knew he was a serial killer and he couldn't help that. It was in his nature. So he goes out and becomes the vigilante and kills people that are supposedly bad guys. I've never watched it. So
that is a plot that's ripped off from Hubert Selby Jr. Hubert Selby Jr.'s last novel is called Waiting Period. It's a little different. It's basically the protagonist is incredibly depressed and decides to kill himself. So he lives in LA, and he goes to buy a gun, and he's shocked to find there's a waiting period to get a gun. Mm-hmm. So he puts down the money for the gun and waits. And during the waiting period, he changes his mind and decides instead of killing himself, he's going to kill bad people. And then he gets his gun. And I don't know if he actually shoots anyone. He kills them in a lot of different ways. But yeah, my only problem with the book as a morality tale is he doesn't only kill people who do bad things. Like, he does kill, you know, child rapists and women abusers and, you know, bad people. But he also kills people who have bad thoughts. Like, he kills a bunch of racists who've never done anything, who are just racist. And I don't agree that even in a, you know, hero slaying bad guys universe, someone deserves to be killed for bad thoughts. I think bad actions is the threshold.
Yeah. Well, I can't tell, and maybe I've got some rose-colored glasses, but was obsession with killing to solve problems and that being almost a first resort, was that always so prevalent in Western culture? I mean, when I was a kid, Batman and Superman didn't kill anybody. Like, even the villains, they would never kill
them.
They might beat them up if they had to.
Bang, biff.
Batman would trap people. That was part of his thing. He was really clever, and he'd throw a batarang with a rope and tie up their legs and lasso them and take them to Arkham or whatever the prison was, the fictional prison. And that was the thing. And
Gitmo.
Do they
kill now? I haven't seen any of the movies, in the new movies at all.
I don't know. I haven't either, but I guess it wouldn't surprise me at all. And, you know, in action movies, people die all the time. I mean, maybe not in Batman. I haven't watched Batman, any of the new iterations. But, you know, the old Arnold Schwarzenegger's movies and Rambo movies is just dudes going and basically blasting fully automatic assault rifles at people, just praying and spraying, and then people just fall down. And I guess you assume they died, and you don't shed a tear or think, oh, well, what happened there? You know, it's so in the background. It's such a routine thing. And I wonder if the thought of killing people was always that prevalent, that people are just expendable and they should, and it's not a big deal. You shouldn't spend any moral thoughts on the dead.
Well, I think that's what states do. And I think people are imitating states when they do that, and they are immoral. And I think people who support states in their immorality are immoral. People who are like, yeah, man, they should blow up those wedding parties to kill one guy. Sure, man.
Yeah.
What if it was your wedding party? That's what I say to those people. What if it was someone you knew and loved? And, you know, you think those people are terrorists because they're shooting at American soldiers who are over there shooting at them. I mean, you know, the people that say, yeah, those are terrorists, are the same people who are gun owners who watch Red Dawn and cheer like we do, you know, who if a foreign invading army dared step on their block and start, you know, rounding people up and killing them, they'd be shooting back. I mean, freedom fighter versus terrorist is always in the eye of the beholder, but and it's really treading thin ground and water to even say these kind of things. But I really, anybody who says, yeah, man, those people over there, okay, I definitely agree that anybody that comes over here and plants bombs and blows up, you know, random citizens is a terrorist. But I would argue that someone who's in their home territory shooting back when they've been peaceful and then someone just shows up and starts shooting at them and mortaring them, anybody who shoots back, that's self-defense, man. That's not terrorism.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, a lot of the guys out there in Afghanistan, for instance, don't even really know where America is. They couldn't find it on a map. They have no plans of getting a visa and hopping on a plane. They just know there are dudes with assault rifles pointed at them, or dudes trampling and patrolling their poppy fields or their land. That's all they know, man. Like, I've talked about this before, but there's a great news piece where this I think he's even an embedded reporter with the military, and he's talking to locals in some rural Afghanistan area, and he shows them a picture of the Twin Towers, and they don't know what it is.
Yeah.
They haven't ever heard of America. They haven't ever heard of New York, and they haven't ever heard of the World Trade Center.
Besides, it's all Jimmy Carter's fault. You know, it's kind of interesting. Jimmy Carter is thought of as the most ineffective, do-nothing American president ever, but he had something to do with starting either Al-Qaeda or the Taliban. Which one came out of the Muj? I forget.
Al-Qaeda.
Okay, Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter and Charlie Wilson, man. I watched this documentary. It's a History Channel documentary from about 6 years ago. I think it's called Charlie Wilson's Real War or something like that. Now, not the Tom Hanks movie about Charlie Wilson called Charlie Wilson's War. Although this is the non-Hollywood background version of it, and it has like an interview with the guy who wrote that other movie, who's the same guy that wrote The Social Network and God, what's his name? I like him. He writes The Newsroom too. Aaron Snorkin. Sorkin.
Ah.
Snorkin. But it's really... both of the movies, the documentary and the drama, both paint Charlie Wilson as a hero. Do you know who Charlie Wilson was?
He was a senator, right?
Texas senator, Democrat senator, who actually got into politics because when he was 14 or 15, his neighbor poisoned his dog because he didn't like Wilson's dog going into his yard. And Wilson was so upset. And the guy who poisoned his dog was like, county councilman or something. So when the election came up for that guy again, Wilson borrowed his dad's truck and drove out to where the black people lived and in shifts, like bussed them all in to vote and just said, I don't care who you vote for, but that guy killed my dog. And that was his first involvement in politics. And the guy lost by like 15 votes or something. And, you know, Wilson had brought like 50 black people to vote. So, that was his first involvement in politics, was somebody killed my dog. I'm going to use government guns against him by turning the government gun, taking the government guns away from the guy. And he got a taste for politics. He was a good looking, dashing Texas playboy, whore mongering cocaine addict. Basically, that's what he's portrayed as, at least in these. And his pet project was arming what became the Muj, was arming these poor peasants in Afghanistan who were being decimated by the Russians. It was basically Cold War in action without having to send American soldiers like they did in Vietnam. It was fighting the Russians without any Americans dying at that time, you know? And basically they just, the Afghanis were fighting self-defense against the Russians, and they were using like World War I weapons, not even World War II. Right. And Charlie got them some, you know, World War II surplus and Vietnam surplus stuff, and they started kind of holding the Russians back, but not defeating them in any way. And then finally, he stole a bunch of money and got appropriations secretly and illegally, went around Congress, did this through the CIA, against most of the CIA's wishes, but with, or on paper, at least they say that, with help of one CIA guy named Gustav something. And basically got them Stinger missiles, which Stinger missiles are shoulder mounted missiles that can take down a plane. They're heat seeking missiles. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden the Russians just got the hell out of there. Like, that's how the Afghanis won. And,
well, the Afghanis are fierce. I mean, they have, nobody's they have ever centuries defeated them there. They of have, this kind of like, thing.
Millennia of this kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, millennia. I was thinking of centuries with firearms. But as long as you give some Afghanis or they can get a hold of some long-range rifles.
Pistols and sticks. Pistols not and even sticks, pistols, man.
Rifles win wars in that kind of thing. And, you know, they just decimated the British. The British were trying to be an imperial power in Afghanistan.
Oh, but it goes back beyond that to, like, the time of Spears. They've been invincible. Like, nobody's ever defeated them on their home turf.
Right, right. Because it's mountainous. It's mountainous, and it's a hard place to
live.
And
they're fighting for their land. They're fighting for their land. It's always been, you know, foreign invaders trying to come in, and nobody fights as hard as people who are fighting for their own land.
No, never, never. Because there's no reason to be there. They're not worried about their wife getting killed. They don't have that passion and that adrenaline that comes with that, that if I don't fight well, then my whole family is going to be murdered by these imperialist foreigners. They don't have
that
sense.
You know, part of their whole family has already been murdered.
Ah,
and that gives them a reason to keep fighting.
Yeah, that's true. And that's the thing is that's what motivates Afghani fighters. It's not – they don't have a sense of loyalty for the Americans because the Americans helped them defeat the Russians. They just know they got weapons and they're going to use them to defend their land from any imperial power. There are apparently fighters in Afghanistan who thought the Americans were the Russians come back. You know, all white people look alike kind of a thing. They saw Western-looking people with better technology than them.
Yeah.
Western-looking weapons, and they just assume, oh, well, and it doesn't matter. It might as well be the Russians coming
back,
right?
They don't hate us for our freedoms. They don't even know it's us. You know?
There you go.
They don't know. They just see guys with guns pointed at them. That is an invading army, you know?
Yeah. Amen.
Anyway, let's take a little trip to the market here and then come back for further abuse.
All right.
Well rested and ready for further abuse. That's what Homer says when he comes back to work. How was your vacation, Homer? I am well rested and ready for further abuse. All right, here we go.
All right.
A science fiction comic adventure from Big Head Press. Quantum Vibe. It's year 2523. There are colonies on Venus, Mars, and Mercury. People travel in bubbles, fly at hyperspeed, with brain implants and artificial gravity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. Quantum Vibe. There's a robot girl and zany creatures made with genetically engineered features. And corporate villains crave the opportunity to steal a profit from mother's ingenuity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. QuantumVibe.com.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Should decisions on what you put in your body be left up to people whose very job depends on keeping certain plants illegal? Or do you believe in freedom of ingestion? The Janome Project is a cannabis science community founded by a leading DNA scientist. Get the app by searching Jane-Ome on iTunes. The app is only $1.99 and all proceeds go to furthering and disseminating scientific truth. You must be 17 or older to download the app. Search Janome on iTunes. That's Jane-Ome.
So Nima, you ready for further abuse?
I am. I'd like to stay on this tip for a little bit because John McCain was in the news today.
You and your news. Always with your news. Well, the whole tip is the state is organized barbarism. So talk about how he wants to go kill Somalis or somewhere.
Syrians.
I forget where it is this week.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, he's never met a war he didn't like. And so he went on, I think it was maybe Meet the Press or something. And I guess it would have been on Sunday. Beat the Press, yes. And he was basically pitching the fact that we need to go into Syria, and one of his arguments was so statist backwards thinking. He basically was saying,
No, he's usually so logical. See,
that's dog bites man right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, duh. But this is kind of man bites dog, the way he put it, is he basically said that they will hate us forever and blowback will happen if we don't invade them, i.e. if we don't go in and put boots on the ground and bombing Syria.
He said blowback?
He didn't say blowback, but he said he was talking to people in refugee camps and got the sense that they were going to get revenge on Americans since Americans didn't help them out.
You know, I really think if there's going to be a state, I don't know. I was going to say, you know, why invade them? Why not arm them and let them fight on their own like we did with the Afghanis? But
they already are. It's not working.
But we just talked a whole bunch about the unintended consequences of that and how that leads to the Twin Towers coming down. So thanks, Jimmy Carter.
Well, yeah. And the thing is providing weapons.
You know what? Charlie Wilson died a couple years ago. But in this documentary, he addressed like why Al-Qaeda happened. Is Al-Qaeda or the other one? I forget. It's Al-Qaeda, right? That came out of the Mujahideen.
Al-Qaeda is the terrorist group that were freedom fighters. The Taliban was the government that sort of swept into a power vacuum.
Thank you. Yeah. That's very concise, and most people don't know that, including me. Al-Qaeda happened. The reason Charlie Wilson says Al-Qaeda happened was after we helped them defeat the Russians, we didn't stay there and rebuild. Basically saying, I stole a bunch of money illegally for these illegal weapons transfers, but we needed to steal a whole bunch more money legally so we could build them everything that had been destroyed, or build them what they didn't have, or build what the Russians had destroyed, or build what wasn't there. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what's behind that, as if, you know, it's that failed government in a box concept. Well, yeah, okay, I know what's behind it as far as
government
how the money
in
goes.
A box. Yeah, that's basically like, here's your constitution we wrote for you. Here's a short list of people we'd like you to have be president.
It doesn't work. I mean, look at the Iraqis. None of them have warm feelings toward the Americans for whatever they did. And whatever they did, you know, as far as rebuilding, didn't really work. There's still blackouts.
But Nima,
still
treatment
gaps.
On Fox News, I saw a man on the street interview in Iraq where a man on the street said he likes the Americans being there. You're wrong.
The reporter probably gave him some free
falafel. That's racist.
That's racist.
No, it's probably an Iranian American actor playing an Iraqi on a soundstage in Burbank.
There you go.
In New Jersey. Yeah.
There's this hilarious clip on YouTube where this fake BBC reporter is interviewing these quote insurgents, and one of them has like a pretty British accent, and they're subtitling him at the bottom, and he gets so offended that, and I've probably said this before, but he gets so offended that the subtitles, he's like, I studied English at Cambridge, you shouldn't subtitle me, I speak better English than you.
Have you ever heard about the BBC wrong man incident? It's really funny, man. It's you and I were talking about Apple Records versus Apple Computers the other day. They're like, they have a legal battle going back to like 1977. The Beatles label is Apple Records, and Apple Computers came out later. Beatles Records tried to sue them. Apple Computers won under the stipulation that Apple Computers would never enter the music market and Apple Records would never enter the computer market. So then as soon as Apple Computers got sound, Apple Records started suing them again. Apple Computers won and named their startup sound Sosumi, Sosumi. Sosumi. And then it went on and like it went on and on and on. And then obviously Apple Computers has entered the music industry. They're basically iTunes Store is the biggest record label there is. And we were talking about the Beatles discography. It just came out like 2 years ago and it was really big news and they released it all at once. Like, and you could buy an iPod that had the whole Beatles discography on it. It was big news because they'd had this long like, we'll never, you know, you shouldn't even be in the music business. So, you know, they had to wait for a couple of the Beatles to die, for the good Beatles to die and the two pussy Beatles to be still around. you know, Sir Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr, who actually, a lot of the rumor is that on the last couple records, Paul McCartney erased all of Ringo Starr's drum parts and Paul McCartney played them himself. Yeah. And then Yoko Ono, but you know, she's a gun grabbing UN bitch. So they finally put it all out. So, but it was big news. A few, when that happened, or like when Apple won, Apple Computers won, or Apple Inc., it's called now, won the right to keep iTunes Store, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, 9 years ago, something like that. The BBC called in this computer expert to be interviewed on like the morning, you know, their equivalent of the Good Morning America show.
Uh-huh.
And his name was Guy something. I don't know what it was. The same day, another guy whose first name was Guy was at the BBC to apply for a technology job, like running their computers. The producer comes out and says, okay, you're on in 2 minutes. Where's Guy? You're on in 2 minutes. And he said, I am Guy. He's like got a West Indian.
I am Guy.
He's a black dude with a West Indian accent.
Great.
Really needs subtitling. And they pull him into the room, put a mic on him, sit him down in a room in front of a camera with a woman interviewing him. He thinks it's the job interview and that they're just filming it for their own records or something.
Nice.
And she's like, welcome, Guy. And he's like, welcome. Thank you. Oh, no, but she used the last name of the other guy that's not there. And you can just see visually his face just going, And she's like, so what do you think of this new ruling that will allow Apple computers to sell music on the internet? And he's like, well, I'm very surprised because I came here for an interview. And she's like, yes, this is the interview. What do you think of it? And he basically did the best he could and answered the questions. And, you know, his answers were kind of basically, well, internet, good, thumbs up. But it was pretty funny, man. It's on YouTube.
That's hilarious.
If you search BBC wrong guy incident, it's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I would totally do that too. I would assume it was some kind of test for the job interview.
Like,
oh, I better not F this up. You know, this could mean me getting hired or not.
Yeah, and he did not get hired.
Oh,
he had his interview a few minutes after that. They realized it, and he did not get hired. Too bad.
Bummer.
So we were talking about the state and how horrible it is, and we just wanted to talk about how great the BBC is and how the most statist nation in the world has the best televised media. They really do. But I want to talk about Neanderthals and language and how the state to me seems like an aberration in evolution.
Is that the proper pronunciation of Neanderthal? Neanderthal.
Neanderthal.
Yep. Ugh.
Yes.
Okay.
So I saw this fascinating documentary about Neanderthals. And the general accepted belief is that, it is definitely a fact that Neanderthals and Homo sapiens existed on the earth at the same time for a relatively short period of years in terms of how long each was around. And Neanderthals, we're not talking millions of years ago. We're talking like 30 or 40,000 years ago was when the Neanderthals died out. Now, the basic belief is that Homo sapiens slayed them. You know, that that they definitely interacted. They were definitely on some of the same continents in the same areas at the same time. And then the Neanderthals ceased to exist. This documentary had compelling information, evidence, let's say information,
okay,
to indicate the possibility that Neanderthals were not slayed. They interbred and were absorbed.
Huh,
and that we get some of our things from Neanderthals. Now, Neanderthals are generally thought of as far more primitive and barbaric than Homo sapiens. Homo sapiens. But here's the interesting thing. They've actually isolated some Neanderthal DNA and analyzed it. And both Neanderthals and Homo sapiens have a gene that basically allowed advanced speech that is necessary to be able to have, like, no other primates have it. And we have it. And it was thought Neanderthals would not have it, but they have it. They had it.
Hmm.
there's actually a possibility that we got speech from them. We got the ability of speech from them, not, you know, that they were actually in some ways more advanced. And here's the reason there's belief that they had speech. Homo sapiens, when they were hunters, generally in plains areas, in the plains parts of Africa and the plains parts of Europe and the plains parts of North America.
Okay.
Hunting where there's not a lot of cover involves having to work in groups. It's the other way around. The Neanderthals were on the plains, and the Homo sapiens were in the more wooded, mountainous areas.
Okay.
In wooded, mountainous areas, you can hunt solitary because you can sneak up on animals that are much bigger than you and kill them.
You can do stealth.
Right.
Like Metal Gear Solid.
Right. Whereas on the plains, where the Neanderthals were, you need to work in groups because you have to basically run up on them. You can't sneak up on them as easily, and they can turn on you a lot before you can get the weapon in them, and you need four guys throwing the weapon in them. So it's believed that the Neanderthals had speech because they were able to hunt in small groups, and they
had to yell out to the other group on the other side, hey, flank him, or he's turning left, kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm. Whereas the Homo sapiens, who had more cover for their hunting, wouldn't have needed language because they could hunt more solitarily.
Okay. So why does this make you say the state seems like an aberration in societal evolution?
Well, there definitely was violence between early hominoids, early Homo sapiens, and early Neanderthals. And there is evidence that Neanderthal were cannibalistic, although I don't necessarily think that's barbaristic if they were killing people who died of natural causes. You know, it seems barbaric now, like, oh, you don't eat your relatives when they're dying, but when they die, but you probably do if there's nothing else around to eat, you know? The reason that they were able to get DNA from the marrow segment of this one Neanderthal bone was that it was basically licked clean of meat. So no bugs or bacteria lived on it, and it was more preserved. But that's not the only evidence that they were cannibalistic. But early human, I mean, humans in America up until 600 years ago, weren't there Native Americans that were cannibalistic 600 years ago?
I don't know. I've probably heard that. I don't know if it's true. I don't know enough about the subject.
We're going to get angry emails now.
I don't know. There's always been, or at least even in regular history, not in prehistory, there's always been human sacrifice. And so there's, even without, you know, the necessity to eat or cannibalize another human, there have been societies that still killed fellow members of society.
Well, that's the state or the church acting as a state.
Right. As Ben Stone says, that's one of the prerequisites or presuppositions of the state, is the importance of human sacrifice. And that continues to this day in this supposedly so modern
in the military
iteration
and
of the
Christians'
state.
Love of the military too. Think about that. Is that where you were going to go with it, or just
exactly?
Yeah.
Well, and it's glorified.
A lot of Christians love the military, man.
And there's those the poems and all the flowery language about how it's the ultimate sacrifice and we should be thankful. And it's not just Western culture. You know, in Iran, the martyrs are really important, and the streets now are. A lot of the streets are named after people who were, quote, martyrs, people who died in the Iran-Iraq war.
What about that 72 virgins thing? Is that real? Is that really in Islam?
My magic eight ball says no. I don't know. I don't think it is. I don't know. I would ask Will Coley. He'd probably know, you know, the verse in the Quran or whatever it is in actual Muslim theology that would, and he'd be able to disprove that or untranslate it. I don't know. I kind of don't buy it, but I have nothing to base that on, really.
There's a Wikipedia entry. If you type in 72 virgins, it goes to Howry, H-O-U-R-I. I don't want to read this. It's a long article. Let's just say we don't know.
Okay.
How's that?
That's fair. That's better than taking a position that we can't defend.
Which is what Fox News would do.
Right.
Or that guy. Who was the Jenkum guy? No, not. What was the guy we interviewed with Will Coley who hung up on Will Coley?
Oh, yeah. I forget his name. He was awful, though.
Burkham.
Just awful.
Burka? Jack Burkham.
Was it Berkman? Berkman? Berkman?
Berkman. Berkman.
Berkman. I think it was Berkman. So. Yeah.
I think it was Jenkum. Jack Jenkum. Jack Jenkum Jimmerheimer Schmidt.
Yeah, yeah. What I had heard about Neanderthals, and again,
Neanderthals.
I don't know.
Neanderthals.
Neanderthals.
Neanderthal.
I can't even pronounce the name right, so don't take my word for it. But I had read that they didn't have as deep a sense of property rights, and they were more of a socialist paradise kind of share everything society.
Well, that was part of their nature. Tribal organizations that are socialist in some way, it's not socialism in the sense that it is that the UK is socialist, of everyone living in this nation is socialist. It's basically
if you're a part
of
our tribal
family
group.
Yeah. And and it does not generally extend to the tribe living over the hill.
They're
often fair game for violence and aggression, and you know, there's always been aggression. It's just the state, man. The state takes it to it's organized barbarism. Now, talk about why that beats roaming bands of barbarians and why there wouldn't necessarily be roaming bands of barbarians without the state.
Well, some in the state.
But Nima, without the state, there would be anarchy and chaos and roaming bands of barbarous Neanderthals beating up and raping grandmother and taking her morphine.
Yeah. Well, to me, the civilization, actual civilization, and the state are antithetical. The state, to
and they're
me, is
often
an
thought of as intertwined or even interchangeable.
Right. Right.
Because they want you to think that they.
But
the man.
I really don't buy that line of thinking. And, you know, I don't think at this day and age there would be roving bands of marauders.
Because everyone's got a gun.
Well, there's that. Yeah, the gun is the great equalizer. You know, some people say that, you know, well, the first best thing would be a society with no guns. And the second best thing would be everybody has a gun. But, you know, guns actually help to equalize because...
Well, that's what the selling point of the cult was. They said God made man, Sam Colt made them equal.
Made them equal, exactly.
It's a great line.
And not just man. When I was antiquing...
Great motto.
When I was doing my anarchist
when I was
antiquing there was a,
did you have a gun? Did you have a gun with you when you were antiquing?
I did.
Okay.
I did indeed.
Then it's cool. It's all right.
And there was a bin of old, you know, and I couldn't tell if they were like reproductions or if they were actual old antique gun advertisements. Couldn't tell. But there was an old Colt one that had this pretty cute girl, like a pretty cute Western girl. And she had
like Tizzle
carrying a leather holster. And out of her holster, she had her Colt revolver in her hand. And it was just sort of crossed over her heart. And that was the sense you got was this pretty little delicate flower can protect herself in the dirtiest, grimiest, most violent parts because she's got the same gun and all it takes is for her to train with it and know how to use it. And then she can protect herself from the marauding bands if need be.
I was thinking of some variation on the old alcohol prohibition era Coca-Cola ads of the sexy lady holding up the Coca-Cola saying, the lips that touch... No, it was Welch's. It was the lips that touch Welch's are all that touch mine. You know, it was unpasteurized like, grapes, so they're not mine.
A teetotaling kind of thing.
Yeah, that was a teetotaling hot babe thing. It was, you know, hot sober chick thing.
Well, I guess you always use sex to sell stuff.
Yeah.
So that's nothing new under the sun.
Yeah, but I was thinking of like, you know, a Colt ad from back then that could have said like, the hands that touch Colt are all that touch me. But you don't need that because she doesn't need the man to protect her because she has the Colt.
Mm-hmm. Well, to me, modern economics or the market is what prevents roving bands. And where you have heavy state involvement, as Molyneux likes to say, a government modified environment, a GME, places like an Indian reservation or housing projects that become a ghetto in the inner city. Those are the places where you actually have something similar to roving bands. You have gangs and you have tribalism and you have people that arm themselves and they take that as their role in society, is to go out and steal or control a black market and use violence to achieve their ends. Where you have that most in modern society is in the places where the government has ruined the economy to the point where that feels like people's only options. In places where there's slightly more freedom, like rural Wyoming, I don't think you'd have roving bands of marauders in a place like Wyoming, or in, you know, in a modern suburb or a nice part of a modern city, where there's such a division of labor.
There aren't gangs in Wyoming. I mean, there's the police, but and there's the city council, but
and there's ICP people. There's juggalos.
You keep saying that, but I've yet to see one here, and I do leave the house. You think I don't, but I do.
Look for the logo of a silhouette of a guy with big nappy hair holding a meat cleaver running.
Well,
that's the juggalo's insignia.
Put it this way. When I lived in LA and San Francisco, I actually was in danger because of gangs walking down a street, being unarmed. I don't think I'm in danger anywhere in Casper walking down the street armed. There are, I mean, literally, like, if you look at the FBI stats on gangs, like, the only gangs in this state and the only gangs I've ever seen there's a biker gang. I forget what they're called, but they pretty much keep to themselves. I mean, the cops say they deal drugs and stuff, but they don't go out and fight over turf because there's, I don't know, man.
There's so just, much turf.
There's so much turf. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I kind of feel like in a modern market with division of labor, there's no real incentive to be a roaming band of marauder. I mean, maybe in prehistory, when it was tribal groups and they didn't really know what was beyond the next hill, and if they found resources, they could go grab it because there's no supermarket to go to, then okay, maybe that kind of a thing could exist. But, where the market is all about buying low, selling high, finding people to buy your stuff voluntarily, with the emphasis being on, I've got a better product than you. When everybody's doing that, there doesn't really seem like room for a group of people who would be a band of marauders. And because there'd be nobody to pay them, they wouldn't have a customer base. The marauders would only have victims. But the people who have a customer base are obviously going to make a lot more money. So a company that provides security and provides it well would have millions and millions of dollars to have better weapons, a better knowledge of how to defend a population or a group or a community or a neighborhood. And the marauders would be very basic. They'd have small arms. They wouldn't know how to use them. They wouldn't have training. They wouldn't have money to go take the whole crew to the gun range every week and every day. So they'd be outgunned, outmanned, outfunded. And I don't really think they could exist for very long.
I really feel like in Wyoming, if an external gang came here and tried to set up shop and do anything other than peaceful things, like dealing drugs quietly or whatever, if anybody came in here and started terrorizing the populace, I genuinely believe people would posse up and take care of it. I really do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess that's the other thing is
so many people are armed.
A band of marauders
will
always be outnumbered.
Here. Yeah,
yeah. The gang of marauders will always be outnumbered and outgunned in this day and age.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing is, you know, we're talking in a practical sense, but a bigger thing, I think, is the logical fallacy of accepting a larger band of marauders, i.e. the state, which is really just a gang of thieves writ large, accepting them because you don't want there to be a band of marauders terrorizing you. So what you're basically doing is saying, oh, I want this big band of marauders to control every aspect of my life, because I'm scared of the small band of marauders. And that just doesn't make any logical sense.
Yeah.
If you're scared of marauders, be scared of the giant one that has drones and tanks and can shut down a whole city and drive armored personnel carriers down your street and point guns in your window. That's what I think is more fearful or scarier to me than any small group of thugs wearing wife beaters with a 38 special in the back of their pants.
Well said, Nima Vedati. That's a
thank you.
Tasty rant number probably two. I think we had one earlier. I'm gonna start pointing them out because we're that good. Transmissions and crocodiles on the Freedom Fiends.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I didn't have the proper effect on. I didn't have my earbud in to monitor my mixer.
That was good. Let's go to the market and get all some right. Neanderthal meat and then come back. Neanderthal meat. Mmm. Come to deep fried Neanderthal.
So
they actually had Neanderthal meat that they were taking apart in this. It was kind of preserved in some ice area. And I was thinking, and I was eating while I was watching it. I was eating Chinese food, and I was like, Neanderthal meat. Because it looked like meat, man. It was meat. It looked like raw steak. All right. Well aged for 36,000 years.
Cannibalism on the Freedom Fiends.
Hey, they're not the
come
same
back
species as me.
I guess so. Okay.
Jesus made the world 4,000 years ago. All right. Mm. There weren't no cavemans. All right.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down. Love The Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog The Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review The Freedom Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread The Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Anarchy Gumbo, Guns and Weed, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
If you like tranny hookers and shooting crocodile, tune in to freedomfiends.com.
We're rolling. Organized barbecues, you want to talk about?
Mmm, tasty. Organized barbarism, which is the name of the episode and sort of the concept
we've been... The state is organized barbarism. Anarchy would be an organized barbecue. Hey, everyone come over. We're having a party.
There you go. Yeah. But the... to play devil's advocate here, I think there's an argument out there that basically goes like this. You know, it's been called legalized plunder as well. You know, that concept of organized barbarism in sort of another way to put it, legalized plunder. And some people think that that's a good thing, that it's in humanity's nature.
Well, as long as it's legal, man. You know.
Exactly. It's in humanity's nature to steal and use what's called the political means rather than the market means, or i.e. using violence to get what you want. And what the state does is it takes that and it puts it in an organized form where everything's, you know, very posh, and people can sit at a desk and write papers and say words with the threat of violence behind
Nima.
Them. But albeit people are doing things, the violence isn't prevalent, whereas
always,
if you didn't have the state,
always.
People would go out with guns and shoot, and it would be more violent. So there's that argument that, well, the state allows us to have this kind of violent nature of humanity. It gives it a civilized forum to where you don't have to worry about the violence of it being immediate, but you just have to worry about following the edicts that with violence behind them. What would you say to that? That humanity is inherently violent, so if you have a state, then you have this organized, more civilized, so to speak, forum for the violence to take place.
Nima, always with the anarchy. Again with the anarchy.
That's not anarchy. I'm saying that's
no,
that would be the
you're,
statist.
You're being an anarchist. You're always – I'm kidding. I'm like – I was just kind of thinking like, wow, we're doing this again. This is episode 205, and it's our let's look at the countdown clock to radio. Let's see. Let me just interrupt your cogent rant and see how long till radio. 1 week, 4 days, 19 hours, 40 minutes, and 52 seconds. And I'm like, always with the anarchy. And no, I'm not criticizing you. I'm like, that's what we do. Like,
yeah.
We get on here and we talk about how the state is wrong. We're right. We don't need the state. It would work better without it. And I'm like, wow, we're not running out of words on this. And we're finding different ways to say new things about the same concept, which basically boils down to don't hit people. Everyone agrees. Don't hit people. Well, most people agree. And then you say, well, you know, by backing a state, you're saying people should be hit, but by someone else, by proxy. And you're like, people are like, yeah, but without the state, the roving bands of marauders. And, you know, but the thing is, even with the state, there's roving bands of marauders, and not just the state. There are still gangs. Uh-huh. I would posit that there are more gangs and they have more reason to exist because of the state, because the state bans nonviolent things like drugs and consensual prostitution and things like that. So in the when they're banned, gangs have a reason to exist and sell them. You know, there's really not a lot of profit motive in just scaring people, especially if the people are armed. You know, I mean, really, I think in LibPair, when the mafia came in and said, all right, you got to pay us $1,000 a week to run your business on this property you own, I think the guy would just shoot him, man. And, you know, when enough people did that, it wouldn't happen anymore.
Or he'd say, hey, my agency is Johnson and Bright, and you can talk to them. Here's their number.
and they'd be like, oh, my God, Johnson and Bright, no. And they'd slink away into the cockroaches they are.
There you go. And he would pay Johnson and Bright willingly. And if Johnson and Bright didn't take care of the mafia goons, then he would call up Stevens and
Vidotti.
Stevens and Vidotti, and be like, hey, Johnson and Bright aren't cutting it. Can you guys go take care of the mafia? And Stevens and Sorensen or Stevens and Vidotti would say, yeah, sure. In fact, we'll give this to you for free. If you like our service, then our rate is $100 a month.
And they drone them.
But yeah, I guess that's the thing, and that's the answer that I fall back to is for the argument of, well, violence is in human nature, so the state provides a civilized way of being violent with each other, a forum for that that's pretty and neat and comfortable. I guess the argument would be, hey, you know what? It's not pretty, neat, or comfortable. It's still violent, and you still do have the other things that you say it prevents. You still have the dirty, gross.
You still have terrorists, man. You still have people.
Yeah, still have terrorists.
You know, if the Boston thing wasn't a false flag created by some rogue part of the government, like Alex Jones says it was, you know, if it was just bad guys from somewhere else who came to America and hate our freedoms and wanted to blow us up, Which it could have been. It could be true. That may have happened.
Right.
Sometimes it is that way, occasionally. You know, I mean, it was really summed up by that meme that's going around. It's got the TSA tank, and it says, now that the TSA has proved, or the DHS tank, and it says, now that the DHS has proved they can't protect us.
Can we have our freedoms back?
Can we go back to being unsafe without the DHS?
Exactly. Yeah, and I guess that's the definite debunking of the devil's advocate argument I was trying to make is with the state you get both. You get both bad things. So why not just get rid of the state? And with the state you get the worst bad things.
Yeah.
Because the state has so much more power.
And without the state, you'd have less of the roving bands of thugs, not more, because they'd have less reason to exist, and the average person would have more defense against them.
Yep.
Now let me ask you this.
Here.
I was joking when I said, you know, your private defense agency would drone the mafia for trying to get a shakedown. But what would be the LibPair policy or action on A, spy drones, and B, militarized drones? I mean, I think part of it would be your private property, your airspace going in a column all the way up to the heavens. You know, mm-hmm. So anything that flew over that without your permission, you probably would be able to do what you wanted to it.
Yeah, and there's wiggle room there too. I mean, say you wanted to pay less for your property, you could sell your sky rights or your airspace rights the same way people sell their mineral rights.
Now, what about a spy drone spying on you that's not going over your airspace?
Ah, kind of like the soda straw drilling sideways into somebody else's mineral rights.
In the Simpsons.
Into their oil. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's still a violation of your property if you own the property rights to the sky and they're, well, I don't know. That's a really interesting question.
I think you'd be able to just have some sort of thing to block it, like, you know, a dome that wouldn't require a permit.
That's what I would hope for, is I would hope the market...
Or you could shoot lasers. I mean, I think if you shot lasers at it, it probably wouldn't be able to see what you're doing on your property, and it might not take it down. It might just disable the optics on it temporarily.
Well, I think there'd be a number of different ways.
That'd be a new market. You'd go to Home Depot and get the Iron Dome laser only version. It would just blind anything that tries to look at you.
There you go. Optical lasers.
Including
not weaponized
curious
lasers.
School children. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. 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 I think you'd have ways of doing that. The market would come up with ways, and there would be people and creative entrepreneurs who would find out ways. I mean, you see this right now. I mean, you have screens, computer screens that you can put on that'll polarize them so you can't see what's on the computer screen unless you're looking directly at it, like the laptop's in your lap. The person to your right and left can't see anything but a black screen. So yeah, you could have things like that that would prevent people not looking directly down at it from actually seeing it. You could have an underground bunker if you were that concerned with keeping things private. There'd be a million different ways or thousands of different ways to try to prevent the things you don't want to happen.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're done with the state. Let's read some emails from listeners. Okay. Why don't you read this one that we got today from Andy@unofficialnetwork.org. Now, this is a site that seems to reblog everything the fiends do, and I always approve when I get a ping back. You know, it's like a comment. So, I didn't know anything about them. I've been approving them forever because they approve of us. And we got an email today from Andy inviting us to join his social network, and I politely declined because, you know, he's basically, I mean, I don't know if he knows much about me, but it's like, hey, you left Facebook because it's too much problem. Takes too much of your time. Come join this thing that's like my Facebook for anarchists, which, you know, there is a certain amount of appeal because it's not, it's a non-statist kind of Facebook type thing, but I don't have time for a social network, man, and you don't either. And I took the liberty of answering for you too and saying Nima doesn't even have time for the fiends, let alone being on a social network. So, he wanted us to read this because it sounds like a good thing to check out. It's unofficialnetwork.org. I don't know if we need to read this whole long email. Basically, it's a forum where each sub forum is quote unquote owned by somebody. Within that sub forum, you make your own rules, can add and remove admins and ban users as you wish. So it sounds like a libertarian paradise where you can kick people off your property on someone else's property while homesteading. So check it out, unofficialnetwork.org.
Yeah, give it a go. And I might join later. I don't know.
No, I won't let you. You don't have time, man. You don't have time.
I don't, but it's my goal to get more time eventually.
Yeah. So, I know things happens. People don't know.
You do. But yeah.
So let's read this email from Rob. Very, very complimentary email, and that's why we like it. No, it addresses something we talked about. I'll pigeonhole it to you, and you can read it, because you're so good at reading, because you did it for a living. You're good at thinking and making up your own words, too. You make up pretty words.
Pretty words. You got a pretty like mouth. I like the way you talk.
You sure got a pretty mouth, Neem of Adati. Yes.
All right. So Rob said, Michael, just listening to podcast from Freedom Fenians. See what Siri did just there?
What is Siri? Anyway, that's like the autocorrect thing on iTurbs,
iPhones.
Right?
Yeah. It's
the iPoo.
The woman in the box. The bee in the box. All right. Anyway, you said
that's
that
sexist.
Anyway, you said that often banning something leads to an increase of that very thing.
We were just talking
Here's
about
a personal
that.
Experience. Yeah. In Canada, handguns have been severely restricted since the 1930s. About 10 years ago, or 15 years ago, the federal government brought in a nationwide gun registry program. Guys like me had to go take a firearm safety course in order to buy new weapons or ammunition, and we had to register firearms. Obviously, lots of people did not register their guns, and some provincial governments did not enforce the registry. The government changed over time, and the registry has now been... Can I say cuss words?
No, but I said Saskatchewan, okay. And that sounds like a cuss word if you don't know what it means.
The registry has now been S-canned. The guy who gave the gun safety course to me were a bunch of young Italian guys who own a store in Vancouver called Italian Sporting Goods. They supply a lot of hunters and shooters around this town. If you took the safety course strictly for long guns, you'd be done in something like 4 nights. If you stayed for a 5th night, you could also get the license for a restricted weapon, i.e. handgun. If you didn't stay the 5th night and then later wanted to get your restricted weapon license, you had to come back and do another 4 nights. Obviously, they recommended that people just stay and do the 5th night. They also told me that they sell way more handguns now than they ever did before the gun registry and gun control came into being. So that's a concrete example from north of the border of exactly what you were saying. Worms.
Worms. Cool.
Yeah, very cool. There's also stats out there on how drug use has increased
a lot
since the drug war. Yeah,
and hard drug use and like excessive, immense amounts per person of hard drug use.
Yeah. I really don't think meth would have the appeal it has now, or be as widespread as it is now. If it weren't so illicit, you know, and if other drugs weren't so illicit and there were better alternatives.
Well, before they cracked down so hard on the war on drugs, you know, speed was basically prescription diet pills that were kind of hard to get and weren't as shootable, weren't as pure, weren't snortable, weren't as cheap, weren't as available. You know, the war on drugs made the market for it.
Yep.
So there.
Yeah, and you know, it's Ritalin and Adderall, which are prescription drugs, which are prescribed so much to high school kids and college kids. I mean, those are everywhere
by the same shrinks who the kids get sent to because they were smoking pot.
Right.
Like, oh, and you're smoking pot. You need to take a much more powerful drug to calm you down. It's a stimulant. Right. Yeah, that'll work.
And then the kid goes to the doctor and says, you need to up my dosage. And he's lying. And then he sells half of the dosage to his friends who crush them up and snort them. You know, people are going to take the drugs they want. And when you interfere with the market and place silly restrictions and rules, then people are just going to want it more. It's kind of like that forbidden fruit. And it's going to be available more, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I heard that John Lennon was killed by the CIA, but I don't have any proof to back that up. Do you?
No.
That he was part of some CIA mind control experiment. Although Richard Nixon hated John Lennon. He absolutely hated him. And he was on like the top of his list of, I don't like you and I want to do things to you.
Yeah,
which is why John got busted for drugs. They went out of their way to bust him for drugs and deport him. Yeah, and he finally got back in. Some other president, you know, said, you can come back now. So, I think that I would imagine that the CIA probably has vendettas that, I don't know about the CIA, but, you know, government dark organizations, like parts of the government that aren't accountable and have unlimited money and don't have to report to anybody. There's a bunch of them. I don't want to pick on the CIA. They're nice guys. No. So, you know, but parts of any government that are the black unfunded, which are like, you know, if you think the day-to-day operations of a state is scary, you know, the parts that you don't know about might be scarier. So yeah. I would imagine that those parts of governments probably have directives and vendettas that are probably centrally like isolated in kind of like cells that don't have to even report to like the people down the hall. Yeah. That probably span well beyond a president. Like basically what I'm saying is I think Richard Nixon could put something in place that says, do something to this guy when you get a chance. And then Nixon is dead, or Nixon is retired writing his memoirs, and three or four presidents later, you know, someone on Nixon's hit list gets hit. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I wouldn't either at all, man. And that's the band of marauders right there.
Yeah, we're probably on somebody in this administration's list, you know. And so when we're retired and not fiending in 40 years and raising our grandchildren, you know, they'll probably do something to us.
That's why I'm never going to retire, man. Always going to be out there.
Yeah.
Putting the stuff out there, man.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I'm near the end here if you are, but I got one little thing to say. It's kind
of
funny.
You got a kicker?
Yeah, well, it's not much of a kicker, but oh, wait, I did what I told you not to do. No, it's great, man. A bunch of episodes ago, I was talking about when I was a bike messenger delivering those letters of lending or whatever to the banks, you know, that had millions of dollars. They were basically printing money on toilet paper and paying me to drive around in traffic and risk my life delivering it. Right. And I was like, yeah, they were called, I forget, it was something like letters of lending, but that wasn't it. It was something else. And I was thinking letters of lending, I said it was some acronym. Letters of lending would be LOL. Like, ha ha ha, we're printing money on toilet paper. We're rich. Yes.
We're LOL. Laughing all the way to the bank, literally.
Yeah, no, they're laughing, yeah. And I'm risking my life going to the bank in traffic on my bicycle. All right, man.
There you go.
It's been
all
good,
right.
Good fiends. Good fiends.
Yeah, definitely.
Worms.
Peace and worms and love.
Hello, freedom fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I owe me and that includes endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom fans, for fact.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Three times a week, Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati share their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network.
Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them. We're not saying the Freedom Fiends are the one true path to anarchist liberation, but it's a good one. If you want to put your voluntarist money where your mouth is, consider making a donation to the Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post. Then make a one-time gift via PayPal or set up a monthly contribution of as little as $3. Giving to the Freedom Fiends helps advance education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. The Freedom Fiends. We work hard, so send us some money.
Scrutinizer.